Desi, noun, a person of Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Nepali, or Sri Lankan origin who lives abroad.
American Desi. Well, that's what we hope to discover here. What's up, everybody, and welcome to American Desis. I'm Akash.
I'm Arjun.
And today we are discussing the interview we had with Shadnani. It was one of the most fun interviews we had. This is basically Arjun's Nani, and I'm assuming after listening, it's everybody else's Nani, too. I know I felt that way after talking to her. She was the sweetest lady. She was powerful. She was strong. She was smart. It was dope. But before we get into that, just a quick order of business. We didn't get to really talk about the spelling bee last week. I know Arjun and I were glued to our television sets while we watched Indian co-champions, eight-peat. We the Celtics of this shit. Eight-peat.
Eight-peat, man.
13-year-old Vanya Shivashankar from Kansas and 14-year-old Gokul Venkatachalam, I think. Correct me if you're listening, Gokul. And if you're listening, the fact that you were wearing Jordans and you won the spelling bee is the culmination of every Indian's dream ever.
I think your Indian dream.
Dog, let me tell you something. I never got more retweets in my life, literally, than I did on that tweet. You don't think Indian dudes fuck with Jordans, son?
I mean, things are changing, man. Also, can we just talk about how they both look? I mean, nerds are supposed to look nerdy. Those guys, I was watching, and everyone across the board, it's like they had stylists for the spelling.
If they don't have kids, I'm going to, like, with each other, I feel like we're doing a disservice to our race. Not now. I'm just saying, like, 10, 12 years from now, you know what I mean? Let's aim for a wedding date of, like, 2028 for Gokul and Vanya. You know what I mean? Let's do that. Save the date.
I mean, it would be, I'm not going to lie, that would be really the sweetest story ever.
Yeah.
It's amazing, though. I mean, we should talk about one thing is that, like, everyone keeps talking about it, and I think it's a really, perseverance. These kids, each of it wasn't either of their first time at the spelling bee, you know?
Yeah.
They persevered. And I think that that's, you know, a beautiful trait for them to have. And a lot of people are going to come out and like, oh, and listen, my parents were a little crazy about stuff when I was young. I mean, I was already in advanced level math in school, but my parents still put me in a math tutor just to go ahead further.
Family friend's dad, I'm sorry to interrupt you. My family friend's dad used to go to teachers and say, assign my son extra homework.
My God. And listen, and there is a level to which that's like ridiculous. And I think about it and I was like, that wasn't needed. But what it did instill with me was a sense of discipline and perseverance. That was really important. I mean, one thing that sounds like we really value challenging ourselves, you know, or being challenged. And that can be a really positive thing.
We've
talked a lot about the potential negative effects of that. But let's just honor the fact that, you know, perseverance and dedication, because these kids don't, I mean, spelling is a skill. There's nothing about it but a skill. You know, right. I mean, it's learned. This isn't like jumping through the roof. This isn't athleticism. This isn't something innate. This is something that's built, and that's what's beautiful about it.
Yeah, we work hard as fuck. We outwork y'all.
Let's jump to Shadnani, because perfect. This was, and I obviously have a great deal of affection for her. I mean, she's one of my Nani's closest friends. And I've met her a few times in India. And then when we were down there, it was just a beautiful thing. She also cooked us lunch, which I just want to say to all our future podcast guests, do that.
I'm down.
It was amazing lunch. But what was dope about it was history, you know, and really getting it. This is a person, you know, who lived through it. Through a lot of it, you know, a lot of history, and being able for her to sit with her as she shared that with us and shared just like things that I didn't even know, you know, And I've grown up going to Kanpur, you know, and just the immense history that's there in that city and just how different it used to be. I mean, it was kind of crazy to hear. It also made me think of like all the history of all the other cities, you know?
Right.
Freedom fighter. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it was anything that like that section when she kept talking about the freedom fighters and this, all of them being there. And then just, you know, it was really cool having her humanize what was, I mean, we hear a lot about what it was like under British rule. And, you know, I have like a very abstract idea and like there's things that I've read, but hearing stuff like, you know, You couldn't sing any songs that praised India. You'd get arrested if you said Bhagat Singh's name.
Yeah.
Like, these kind of things that were, you know, true forms of oppression, you know?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, she said, and I'd never heard this before, I have to be honest. I'd never heard this before. I don't know if this is a sentiment that is thought is a widespread sentiment, but she said, I was born in a slave country. I was a slave.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, whoa.
I'm going to be honest. A lot of the really heavy stuff she said didn't land on me the way it should have, because I was just like, she was just a nani to me. And it was just like, yo, this is adorable. This is the sweetest, you know what I mean? So a lot of the stuff, until you said it later, I was like, oh yeah, that's crazy. But that was an insane sentence. And I remember that one kind of being like, wow.
Well, it's also like, I mean, it's interesting. You say that, and then it makes me think of, like, just her resiliency. I mean, this is a woman that, like, I mean, this is a woman that, you know, you could feel it. You could feel, I hope you guys could feel it through the interview, but just a lot of strength. A lot of strength.
She's a beast.
Slave was, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because we don't think about slavery in that same way. We have a very specific idea of slavery in this country, you know, or I do. You know, it's very specific to, you know, having zero rights. And I think that I would say that she's not, I think it's a slight, I know she felt that way, so I'm not at all going to argue her sentiment, but I say that, like, there were more rights than, say, slaves that had here, or,
right,
you know,
but it's
slaves
also just
that are in,
like,
Egypt.
It's like talking to someone who lived in America in 1764 and knew, like, yeah, Paul Revere was my neighbor. That's what it was. I mean, because our nation's young enough that we could do that, that we have.
That's true, man. Yeah, that's a good point.
It's just surreal. Like, imagine you're talking to somebody like, yeah, Paul Revere and I, we were homies. You know what I mean? Like, we went to the market together, churned butter together. That's what we did. He's my butter churning partner. You'd be like, fuck, that's crazy. And that's what it was to hear somebody who was a part of it, and her brother was a revolutionary. And, like, it's nuts, man.
Well, it was also, you want to talk about resiliency. This is a person that, you know, her father died very young. She said that in the interview.
Oh, my bad.
Her father said her father died very early, and her brother was arrested a lot. And her education suffered a lot because of that. And, like, she had to, you know, she was placed in a role that, you know, young people aren't always, you know, aren't required to, and usually hopefully don't have to do. And yet a person whose education suffered a lot ended up becoming a professor.
Yeah.
I mean, let's just talk about that. That's just fucking, that to me is just so indicative of resiliency and strength. Even though she didn't want to be a professor, just someone whose education suffered ended up becoming a professor. I love that. I mean, that's a beautiful, beautiful thing to me. It's just like, we as people we have incredible capacities. And that's what I came away from her. I was just really inspired by just her capacity. And that's what I love about, I mean, we do talk about a lot about, and there's a lot that's true about, you know, South Asian women's rights and what's going on right now. And there's a lot of horrifying things that are going on. But there is a strength that I've experienced growing up with these South Asian women that is always so fucking dope. Just so much strength. Grounded. Yeah. When I, like, they make me understand why we say Mother Earth. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They make me understand what it is.
Men can't put up with the same level of shit women can put up with. It's just insane. Like, no man could do what Asada Shakur did. You just can't. I'm giving up. I'm going to kill myself. And I'm just,
what?
I'm going to just be out. You don't know the Asada Shakur story? Buried in prison for 8 years or whatever with no light. It's just like, no, they're stronger in that sense. They could put up with way more. But you know what that made me think of as you were talking is the stock that we come from. That, like, she had a son that came to America, right? Mm-hmm. Most of us come from, like, our parents and grandparents were incredible people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the cream of the crop in India came here. And we should appreciate that, and I think we should feel a certain responsibility to carry that legacy forward. Like, we came from some dope genetics or stock or family, whatever, a legacy. So, like, we got something to carry forward.
I agree with that. I'm going to also say it's not even just the cream of the crop that came over here, but it's just the resiliency that is there, period.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because
that resiliency.
The most whatever.
Well, it's just like, you know, this is a person whose education was suffered because her father, like, you know, I don't know that she had a ton. I don't know if she, but she grew to that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's very, you know, and so I don't know, it's just a capacity that I feel with like is possible with a lot of people.
Right.
And not just the cream of the crop, which I know isn't what you were saying, but hold up a sec. There was something I wanted to say before we jumped into her talking about her responsibility to the nation was this.
Well, real quick, I want to talk about Kanpur. When she talked about how like how it used to be so clean, it used to be so whatever. My mom didn't go to India for like 25 years. We just couldn't afford it. And then she went back, and she was more disgusted with anything than anything. She was like, it's so dirty now. Like, we went to Sultanpur, where my dad grew up, and she was like, this place is filthy. What is this? And I don't know, it was the same thing I kind of got from Nani D. It was like, all the progress we think we made, we're not taking care of our own villages and whatever. Like,
Even just villages, man, cities, period. I mean, Modi had a big thing, I think this was a few months ago, where every government employee was supposed to clean a certain area, and they like cleaned entire New Delhi railway station, which is a fairly dirty and quite, for lack of a better word, I hate using the word disgusting, but it's quite disgusting there.
And gross as fuck. I don't know why we got to tiptoe around it. It's gross as fuck.
But so they really are making it. But it is interesting. I mean, I don't know the answer. I asked my nani yesterday when I spoke with her about why is this happening? Like, why has it changed so much? Because I did, you know, growing up for the last, 28 years that I've been going to Kanpur, like, it's always been the same level of dirty, you know? So hearing that it used to be is even like, it's hard for me to even comprehend that. And so I was asking her about that, and she said, people just stop taking care of it. You know, people just stop taking, the government stopped taking care of it. And I'd be interested to find out more and talk to more people about why that's happening.
You know, it's interesting. I may have mentioned this on an earlier podcast, but my uncle that's the most like pro-India / civically minded, whatever, in America, we have this thing in Dallas every year called Anand Bazaar for Independence Day, August 15th. They have like a big, it's like a festival, a lot of street, for a lot of food, whatever, food stands, whatever. And it's he took pictures of all the litter everywhere. And he was like, listen, we always act like this is just Indians in India. And that when you go to India, that's why it's dirty. We're here in America, which is all about keeping it clean. And this is the filthiest stuff ever. People would just like throw stuff away on the ground. Literally, he would show food on the ground everywhere. And then like 3 feet away, there'd be a trash can. And he'd be like, it's right there. It's like a conscious choice to just throw it on the ground and make it dirty.
What is that?
I don't
know. What is that? That's horrible.
We should talk about it. That's a weird thing, man.
Like, that's just weird. Yeah, it's just weird to me. That's just weird to me. Because, you know, I don't... Where did we shift? Because that's interesting that it's not just... that makes me upset, frankly. Because, I mean, it's funny because this is a part of Indianness or Desi-ness that I don't identify with. Because my mother is the cleanest human being.
Oh, our house clean as fuck, bro. You don't go to an Indian person's house. You take your shoes off when you get in. Don't bring that filth into my living room. But I was in Sultanpur, and I asked my uncle, hey, where do I throw this away? He's like, just throw it outside, out the window. I was like, what? You don't have a trash can in the house, Doug? And he's not poor. You just got to have a trash can. I guess there's no trash person on, like, a municipal level or whatever that'll come take it out. Maybe that's the issue. But it's also like, this is...
But here, let's talk about it here.
Let's talk about here, because I can speak to that with authority.
Because you're right, though, because our houses are incredibly clean. And then we step outside.
We're the cleanest, maybe, race. You could very easily make a case. We're the cleanest race. We don't do germs. I don't drink your jutta. I'm not sharing food with you. You know what I mean? Like, we're the cleanest.
Sure, but whether they're cleanest or not, it's not
in
that
our
question.
House. But then outside.
We leave our houses. Guys, whether we explore why and get to the root of it, frankly, I don't really give
a
shit.
What y'all got to think. Send us some shit.
Send us some shit, but also just change.
Yeah.
Be better. Because that's crazy. That makes me upset. But what she was talking about and what was sad, and this is something that is true. I was talking to one of my cousins. She is probably an incredibly pro-India, very nationalist woman, and she lives in Mumbai. And she says, India is not a new country. India is an advanced nation in decline.
Ooh.
And that is, it's sad to hear, but it feels appropriate. I mean, when you think about the Ganga, she was talking about how the Ganga was, you know, the source of power, and it was running. I mean, it was full. And when I go back there, I go to the Ganga. It's depleted. It's just depleted, man. It's barely there at times, and it's depressing. it is depressing to hear, and it hurts a little bit. And I got to be honest, I don't have anything other to say than just that just hurts. Let's talk about her responsibility to the country. She was talking about her son, who has come to America and been an incredibly successful man.
Like, that house is crazy.
He's a consultant for a lot of businesses that do stuff in India, and we're actually going to be trying to talk with him next time Akash is out here. But it was so funny how she was just like, as proud as she was of him, she was also like, it's diminished a little bit by the fact that he lives in the States.
Man, she was overtly bothered by it. You're talking about diminished a little bit. She was like, this fucking sellout.
she was just like, but the thing that she said is, you know, she wants her son to come back to the birthplace. But she said, you know, UP, Uttar Pradesh, and the country gave you so much. What are you giving back to the country? And she's upset by a lot of the talent that left India and came here. So here's the question, though, right, that I have. We have our American Desi, you know, people that we're talking, the community that we talk about. Yeah. Let's bring it to us. Which country has our responsibility?
You know, I'm going to lean India.
Why?
I feel like that's where we came from. I also feel like I got a lot of family that's out there that wasn't as lucky to meet as to live here. And so,
but that's not what she's talking about. She's not talking about responsibility of family, because that's transcends nation, right?
But that's what brought them here, the responsibility to their family.
Right, but now what she's talking about is you're giving back economically and like intelligence-wise to America and not to India, while her other son, is doing stuff in India.
The son she loves more.
I mean, but that's the question. Is like, all right, cool. So if we separate responsibility to family, because yes, like to our ones that haven't been as fortunate, right? Or and monetarily, like helping out like a village or something. But economically, you know, I wasn't trained in India. I went to college here, you know, acting wise. I mean, all of it was here. So I think, isn't the argument to be said that like my responsibility is to this country?
You know how poor people a lot of times inherit the debt of their parents? That's how I feel about this. Not that we're poor, but like this is a debt that our parents may not have paid off back to India that we'll just take on. That's honestly how I look at it. Maybe that's an oversimplification or whatever, but like
So you're saying our parents moved over here and weren't giving that back to India,
and they brought their brain
and
their talent over here, and they helped America. So I'm gonna pay back India. So they helped America, I'll pay back India. That's how I feel. I don't want it to be 100%. Like, I'm not saying like, I mean, my job is here. I'm gonna do whatever I do. My creative shit is gonna be here because I think it only works here. But like, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question I hadn't really ever thought about, you know. Do we have, you know, obviously we talk about a kinship to both and we feel like we're stuck in two lands, but do we have a particular responsibility to one? When she said that, I was kind of like, huh, you know what, America has given me a lot. You know, it has given me
this is a great country.
Everything. So, you know, I definitely feel responsible to give back. And I feel it similarly to you, that I feel a strong responsibility in India. But it was interesting. And then the only thing, the only thing I really want to close out with, besides just keep, because I could keep talking about how fun it was to talk to her for hours, because we did a whole other, like, 30 minutes in Hindi with her later.
Yo, I wish we let her speak in Hindi, because that's when you would see the real spark. Like,
yeah,
she was great
and
sweet and whatever in English, but, like, in Hindi was a different man.
She, I mean, it is true. We asked her to speak in English because we know we have met at least three non-Hindi speaking listeners. And actually, you know, as we know, a lot of our, you know, American Desi listeners also aren't fluent in Hindi. And so we didn't want people to feel left out. But it did definitely kind of, you could feel her struggling with language and she wasn't able to be fully herself.
There's one sentence where she spoke Hindi and you could just feel the pop.
Yeah.
Listening back, being like, oh, there it is.
But it was interesting what she said about Hindi speaking people. Actually, now that we're talking about it, she said Hindi speaking people, their kids don't speak Hindi. Gujarati speak Gujarati. Marathi speak Marathi.
Oh yeah.
She was talking
talk
about like different regions speak their own languages, but Hindi for some reason don't. I have no comment on that except that fuck, that's interesting. I didn't think about that.
Right.
And I don't know why. I mean, this is what I love about this interview. There's so many things that she said that I was just like, fuck, that's a question to think about that I literally don't have an answer for. Right. And if y'all do, if there are things that you guys, please, we'd love to start that conversation.
Yeah.
Let's move over to our little community.
Yeah.
People, our people that we love most of the time.
You love.
We are jumping to Twitter. We got a lot of love. This, you know, it was really thrilling. A lot of people responded that it was so nice to hear from Anani.
Yeah.
Madhurita Sengupta, you guys, this was the greatest. Made me want to call my grandma and just chat. I'm going to do that tomorrow. And she actually hit me up on my personal page and told me like some of the stuff that Anani said that was hilarious. But it was just, reminded people. I really can't stress. I've been fortunate, you know, I only have one grandparent left and she lives in India. But with technology these days, I have a Vonage app on my phone and I literally just press her number. Saved in my phone. I ain't got to do shit.
Doug,
I
put $50 a month. Just talk to him. Nani was my favorite person in the world. She passed away when I was 13 and just cherish. If your Nani is still around, just cherish that. Just call your Nani, whoever, easy. Just do it.
It's super easy. I talk to her once a week, and even 5-10 minutes, but it's such a beautiful thing, and it's made my relationship with her so strong that when I go and visit her, you know, we just, like, it's beautiful. Nuzi also said something. Today's interview was sweet and beautiful, made me really miss my Nani. So much of who I am as a woman today is because of her.
Me too, me too.
Sarah Myers, you know, this isn't just the South Asian thing. You know, Sarah Myers, don't effing mess. I agree. Love this so much. My Nana is 92 and still volunteers twice a week. She's my favorite person.
I think that's Nana. I think that's a grandmother. That's
Nana.
Yeah, that's gotcha. What white people Thank say.
You. Right. Yeah. Thank you. And then honestly, people didn't have a ton to say about the things that she was saying.
I mean, what are you going
to
argue with? What are you going to argue with? No Nani.
But we did have some questions that we've posed in the last 15 minutes. So I'd love if some people, like, if some of that stuff, you know, maybe you had a situation where you kind of got lost into just how sweet it was. And maybe on second, like, visit, you'll have some stuff to say.
We got a truthfully, Facebook message. You want me to get into that real quick?
Let's get into that. And then we'll come back to the other Twitter stuff that I was going to talk about.
Yeah. This one's important. This is from Shayak Sengupta. I hope I said your name right. This is embarrassing. Whenever I feel like I'm messing up an Indian name, I'm so fucking embarrassed for myself. All right, Arjun Nakash, I enjoyed listening to your interview with Shadal Nani. It reminded me of my own grandmother's stories of partition in 1947. I wanted to share info about the 1947 Partition Archive. It's a nonprofit based out of Berkeley doing really great work in recording and preserving oral histories of those who survived partition in South Asia. I submitted my grandmother's story. It was definitely a moving experience to hear a story of leaving her homeland and settling in a new city after independence. I'm not sure if you know about the organization already, but they need any and all the support they can get. Here's a good point he brought up. He said, a lot of those who witnessed the events of 1947 won't be around in a few years, especially in the West. What happened isn't well known. That point hit us pretty hard. So let's check out that website, 1947partitionarchive.org.
Yeah, we're definitely going to post that up today. We're going to tweet that out so that you guys have it and take a look at it. You know, I think that's a really beautiful cause because, you know, history is incredibly important. You know, I mean, there's so much that, man, I say this all the time in the, you know, with the theater company I started. I'm like, fuck, man, we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. Look, the wheel's there. It's better. Like, we're not trying to reinvent it. And I think that so often, like, new generations get caught up in repeating the mistakes of the past. And just getting to talk to our elders. And I think that's why, you know, there's such a celebration of elders in our culture is because they know better.
Yeah.
They just know better.
Yeah.
And it's not to say they're always right. That's not to say they're always right.
But they got experience.
They've got experience. And it's like, let's just try to celebrate that. Let's keep celebrating that. And it's hard for me, you know, because in this country, youth is celebrated. And across the world, I think this is becoming more and more. It's not just a this country thing. But youth is celebrated. Like, we want younger and younger actors. We want stories about younger and younger people. And the truth is, man, young people, they're kind of boring.
Yeah, they're just like fucking dumb up as all the fuck. Time. They don't know nothing.
Yeah.
If you 23, you just graduated. Go ahead.
You're supposed to be that. That's what you're supposed to be. Don't be anything else, because you know what? How could you be anything else? You've been on this earth for 15 to 20 years. You just don't know anything, and you shouldn't. Go ahead.
Y'all dumb as shit. That's all I was going to say. Someone who just got out of college, you're the dumbest person on earth. There's no one dumber than you. You don't know anything. You think you figured out the world. You just figured out college. Shut up. And this is what I'm going to say about the elderly real quick. You know how many times you think, like, man, if I could go back and do that again, I would do it so differently. That's all an elderly person is trying to get you to do. He's like, yo, I've been here. I made this mistake. If I had a time machine, I would go back and change this immediately and do it this way. Do it this way. That's
just
it.
Just do it.
Stupid idiot-ass kids. You dumb kids.
Also, it's so funny. We're totally, you know, we're going to be the guys in like 20 years that are so curmudgeon-y. I mean, you're already
I'm already
curmudgeon.
That, dog. I'm a 90-year-old man in a younger body. Not even that much younger.
I love that you won't talk about your age. It's hilarious.
I mean, I don't want to. I'm not going to lie about it. I'm not going to just mention it.
That's fair. But anyways, 1947 partitionarchive.org. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Check it out. We're going to definitely, you know, show some love to it. And I don't know, it's a pretty cool cause.
Oh, also real quick, 1947 is the numbers. Don't spell it out. 1947, then words, partitionarchive.org.
Good looks. I don't think anyone was actually going to type out.
I mean, I assume they knew, but I just wanted to say
no. I know. It's just, you know, in line with your thoughts that everyone's stupid. Some little current events. We usually don't do a lot of current events, but it's just because someone hit us up on Twitter and it is relevant. Bobby Jindal, he's making an announcement June 24th, but we all know what the announcement's going to be, is that he's going to be running for president, which is politically, just from a political standpoint, a hilarious jump.
He finna lose. I mean,
he's a hilarious jump. I mean, he's never. I mean, this is it's a big step. But Ms. Sengupta had a little rant so that I'm just gonna read. So now that he's running, I had to do my due diligence and looked up the transcript to the talk in case that article was mischaracterizing. But in all caps, nope. But I did just listen to y'all's discussion of this. And particular note here is this was in the UK too. He's won the governorship two times in a very conservative state, so maybe Akash is on point with he has to cater to his constituency's views. But he lived in that state for 10 years, saw discrimination, but so hard to believe that there are people who refuse to assimilate. Also, he got some fire for this no-go zone nonsense at that time, which I'm now connecting two and two. Also, rant over, sorry. I didn't follow all of that rant, I'm not going to lie.
I don't know what a no-go zone is.
I don't know what that is either. We probably, you know, should have looked that up.
You know, my cousin is raised in Louisiana. He moved there when he was like five, and then he grew up there. And he's Indian, obviously. And he's like, I don't think Bobby Jindal is this dude. It bothers him more because he's like, I think he's a complete phony. But it does make sense, man. If you're an Indian running for governor in Louisiana, the only way you're going to win these votes is if you overcompensate with all this, like, I don't even like being Indian. Because you're in a super conservative state who looks completely different than anybody they ever elected.
Well, why would, but what was I saying? Leadership, an element of leadership. No, no, I know. I mean, but it's just like strange. An element of leadership is, you know, leading, not just following the views of everyone else.
Sure.
So that's, I mean, that's the one thing that boggles my mind. Second thing is, why are you, the person that chooses to run for governor of a state with the knowledge that he's going to have to change everything about himself. You know what that is to me? Someone who desperately wants power. And that, you're just gross to me in general.
Every politician is someone who just desperately wants power. My boy had the best observation, Michael Blaustein, comic. We're watching the presidential election, and he's watching it for like 5 minutes, and he goes, why would anyone want this? And that was such a good question. It's because they're fucking sociopaths, all of them. They just want a lot of power. And listen, whatever. I just like, of course they all want power. That's how all politicians are to me. I just think he's a dude that puts success over staying true to himself. And I don't particularly, that don't jibe with who I want to be.
Well, I think it's also interesting to me is that a lot of minorities vote in blocks. You know, I mean, there was a big thing that, you know, when Barack Obama was, you know, when he was running in 2008, it was very clearly like he was going to win 90 to 95% of the black vote.
Right.
If a Latino person jumps out there, he or she will get 90 to 95% of the vote.
Personally, as he should, in my opinion. I think that's how it should be.
super funny to me and kind of upsetting on some level that for Bobby Jindal, I can't imagine him getting 30%, more than 30%
I would be
of South
shocked
Asian
if he got 30%.
And that's just so interesting to me because it's like it's such an interesting thing of like, who is that person that would be – would we even – like, are we a block? Like, would we even be a voting block?
Yeah, if there was somebody we could get behind, but he's not that guy. And that's kind of why I'm done talking about him. He's just going to be a punching bag. That's all
totally,
he's going
to
be.
Totally, but let's talk about this, right? Barack Obama, to a lot of people, people can't get totally behind, but he's a black man ascending to power. So people are like, let's jump on that.
Sure, but he seems proud to be black. You know what
right.
I mean?
Totally. Right. But I will. I'm also wondering about this. It's like a lot of our community is in positions of power. So the idea of watching someone ascend to power, we don't feel the sort of responsibility to like latch onto that. Which is why, for a lot of people, you know, even if say a Latino person came on and you didn't quite agree with his views, like. You would want to push him. I feel like a lot of that community would push that forward, right? For us, none of us agree with his views, and he's a. I mean, he if he got president, I mean, that would be a huge thing for like the South Asian American community from like a standpoint of like image and like where we are in the world of America. And yet, none of us give a fuck about enough of that because we're just like we disagree with him.
Oh no! I mean, he seems to want to distance himself from us, and that's where I think most of us get put off. If he had different views. I'd vote for him. I mean, listen, I think it's always nice when an Indian dude gets power and still marries an Indian girl because I feel like there's this idea that we have that we made it when we don't have an Indian on our arm, and that kind of doesn't sit well with me. I would love to like this dude. He just don't make it. He makes it impossible.
Makes it impossible.
By saying you shouldn't hold on to your culture and stuff like that. It's like we all want to like this dude. We're all waiting for someone that we can like that's in that position, and he just ain't really it.
But it's also it's a thing, and we've talked about this before. It's just a huge difference for our people. The generation above us, super conservative. Our generation is mostly quite liberal.
Yeah, sure. But he's super conservative in a different way than we're super conservative. Our older generation is 100% about maintaining the culture. When you say something like, it's your responsibility to let go of it, older generation jumping off board. No one is going to agree with this dude, ever.
Yeah,
he's
the generation
just
going
to be a punching
us.
Bag for us to feel good about ourselves. That's
totally.
What
I'm moving
be.
Beyond him. I'm moving beyond him. I'm just right. talking about general shit right now. The generation above us is quite fiscally conservative
sure.
as well, which
sure.
is what he is.
For sure. But they're not putting that over. That's the one thing they'll value over finances is still being Indian. You cannot mess with that. That's the pillar of everything.
I think I want to close out with a couple things because our time is running short. And to be real, I got to go run to the gym. We
got to work
on
that chest.
Yep.
You seen Arjun's chest game lately? She's on point.
We recently got an email from somebody. Noah.
In the future, can you just pretend you got some more important shit to do? Just pretend.
Then what?
Then doing push-ups.
I mean, listen, we could talk about how I have two auditions to go tape
there
today.
There you go, also, dog.
I mean, like, there's
that's
other
what
shit
saying.
Going on.
You're famous. Start letting people think you famous. Stop saying, oh, I got to go to McDonald's. You know, breakfast is done in 2 minutes.
I think it's the complete opposite of what I just said.
No, but the idea is that it's some useless everyday shit. Nah, man, you got two auditions today. I got to run. I got a busy day.
Let me tell you something. I would love if the gym was, like,
magician,
an everyday
sci-fi.
Thing for people. Are you just did I talk over you perping me? Go ahead, big up me
yeah,
again.
Yeah, I'm you know, I just gotta go I gotta film, I got this pilot for CBS, I gotta fly, I gotta get ready. I'm flying to New York Monday. It's a crazy life is crazy famous. That's how you do
yeah.
it.
Oh, I can't announce this. This is I like announcing the things to our podcast. I booked a small part in a movie that's being directed by RZA.
Yeah.
From Wu-Tang Clan.
Yeah.
With Azalea Banks, Common. Jill Scott. I mean, my Black Street cred better skyrocket
well,
for doing this movie.
Azealia Banks, black people don't really fuck with.
Really?
Yeah, because she's a militant that dates white people. She's one of them. It's like, yeah, I guess, man. Give me my 40 acres and a mule, and then she's dating swim fan. So, like, you know, whatever. And then she just also says some crazy things. If you follow her Twitter, it's nuts. I'm curious to know what she's like in real life. Let me know what she's like in real life, because I have a feeling she's actually the sweetest person.
I hope so, because the way we're talking about her, she ain't going to want to fuck with me on this show.
Oh, it's just me talking about her, and that's fine. She ain't going to listen to this podcast, and if she does, I'd say I bet she's the sweetest person in real life. Her Twitter just a little bit crazy.
We got an email on May 29th that we didn't respond to, frankly, because I wanted to give its proper due. It's from Noah. Oh, and he gave me a Itomizian. Itomizian. I'm sorry, dog.
You Noah even some gave shit. Me. Appreciate
you gave me a pronunciation key, and I still fucked that up. But I wanted to say this. He dropped us a dope email about the Sikh history in the United States. And Indian American history, not just Sikh. Indian American history. And so this is definitely something that we're going to find a way to incorporate into the podcast over the next several weeks, because it's really interesting stuff. We have some great stuff with Brown Girl Magazine, who was in our podcast 2 weeks ago, they have started to do, we're starting to build a partnership with them, and they have some podcast correspondents is what they're calling them. They're going to start some outside, you know, writers that they know and they hire and they are in charge of are going to be doing some critiques of our episodes, what people are saying, how it relates to them, how they feel about it. We're really excited about it. We've seen a couple of them. They're really dope. Be totally honest, we have no involvement in it. We're simply just going to post it on our website and tweet about it. We want to let you know this was happening. We're excited about
building
something.
If they hate us, they're
going to
let y'all
know.
If they think this episode sucked, they're going to be like, all right, well, this was terrible and it was a waste of everybody's time.
We're going to drop another episode. I'm super excited for. We're dropping Mala next week, right?
Yeah.
Oh, guys, you're in for a treat. Mala Mukherjee, she's an author. She wrote a memoir called Ashes, which... if you have a chance to read Ashes, get on Amazon. I'm pretty sure it's at local bookstores, I'm sure. But, you know, just Google that shit. It's amazing.
Made me cry a lot.
We were fortunate to speak with her, and she was so dope. We definitely made it a two-part episode. So we will start. We were going to be dropping that on Monday. Get ready for that. Really exciting stuff.
In the meantime,
I think that's all I got.
Yeah, that's all we got. In the meantime, can y'all rate and review the goddamn podcast, please?
Well,
I'm so tired of telling you every week. You don't do shit. You're so fucking stupid, people. Huh?
Well, now we're on Audio Boom. We need to find a better... Now that we're, like, really pushing through Audio Boom as well as iTunes, we also want to push you guys towards that. We've made it as easy as possible for y'all. Like, literally, in our posts on our Facebook and our Twitter, the player is right there. And our website's soon going to have the player in there as well. So you don't even have to, like, go to iTunes. You don't have to go into an app. You'll just be able to just press play and just, you know, listen to the sweet sounds of Arjun's voice.
Yeah, and my shit. And my shit, too.
Please do show love. And we're still building. And we just, you know, it helps us, truthfully. It helps us. And it would be, we like what we do, and we'd like to keep doing it. So send a love, rate, review. All that kind of jazz, you know, tweet about us, maybe share it with friends that you think might be interested.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm Arjun.
I'm Akash.
We'll catch you in a couple of days.
God bless.